the bond market and the equity market, they live in the same room. They're like college dorm mates. They're like college roommates. Okay. One is very, very clean, and one is a hot mess who likes to party. Okay. So the bond market, that's the nerd. Everything is clean. And he's studying. And the equity market guy's like, yo, what are you doing? I'm like, well, we're starting to see high yield sell off. Oh, okay. So we should tell people that, like, you know, things are going to go backwards, right? Yes. Oh, cool. I totally cheated off your paper. Right on. That's what happens, right?
Matt, welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show live, presented by ARPG. I'm Garrett Lail here with Matt Dahl. We are trying, well, we did the live show a couple of weeks ago. That went pretty well. We survived it at least. So we've decided to make this a regular thing.
I was happy with it. Came out really good.
So we didn't announce this, so I doubt anybody knows about it. But when you do listen to this, for future reference, we will, if you would like to join us live, we'll be recording every other Friday at 1 o'clock Eastern time. That's 10 o'clock out in Matland. And you are welcome to join us on YouTube, on the Wealth Partners YouTube channel. I'll also probably put a link on Wealth Partners' website. And if you'd like, I can put it on your website too, or I can give it to you and you can put it on yours. But anyway, if you would like to join us live, you can comment questions. If you want to interject once in a while, I'll try to monitor comments just in case someone does have a question live. We'll be able to kind of interject them and throw Matt some curveballs here and there. But we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it. So thanks for joining me again, man. Been been an interesting couple of weeks.
Happy Friday. If we don't have enough to talk about today, we probably ought to stop doing this show entirely.
I was going to say, is it a happy Friday?
let me see. I don't know. Somehow, take a look here. Channel got changed. There it goes. For some reason, I was watching TV has some Christmas special on or something. I'm not exactly sure what's going on right now. I don't have my computer on.
We're down just a shade today.
Yeah, we're just doing this instead. So it's coming around. The market's coming around. It's certainly off the lows of the day. Here we are on March 21st, first day of spring, the year 2025. So market was down about 5,600 today. And about an hour ago, Trump announced that there was tariff talks with China, that he and President Xi are talking. And, you know, there is room for negotiation on these tariffs. And kind of like you and I have been discussing these last few weeks, I don't think Trump wants tariffs. I think he just wants our tariffs to go, the tariffs that other countries put on our products to go away. So it's a level playing field. Simply, it's as simple as that. So clearly, they believe he's not bluffing. He's going to do it. And there's countries that are smart, getting ahead of it, and trying to work it out before the April 2nd deadline. The reason he gave them 30 days was to figure out how they're going to work it out, right? That's the whole point of it. But and I think that's been the easy answer in terms of why we've had this correction. This correction is full on California surfer gnarly, right? Okay. This was 10% in 20 days and about 14 trading days. That's the fifth fastest correction on record ever. Okay. To get into correction territory within 20 days. Okay. It started effectively right at when Trump announced the tariffs on February 19th. That's when the tariff language really started to come into play. And of course, we hit an all-time high on February 18th. So we had, back to the banjo string, we had a pretty tight banjo string, and all of a sudden we got tariff talk. So it didn't take a genius to see what was going to happen at that point in time, right? There was going to be a pull down. Who knows how far, how long, but these typically, these tariff related pullbacks, these fast corrections don't have a lot of staying power. You know, back to the seasonality, it's February. We inflect usually in March. There's always what they call the equinox. They turn at the equinox, right? Happens in spring, happens in the fall, in October, the same thing, right? It's kind of an old stockbroker almanac type of thing. But, you know, we're kind of seeing that play out. And I think there's probably a heck of a rally ahead, you know, and our previous show coined great, the storm before the calm. I think, you know, are the lows for sure in? No one knows. Anything can happen. But it's looking increasingly likely that the lows we had of, you know, 55.20 from last Thursday are likely going to be the low of this cycle. Okay. There's going to be some chopping around, filling in some volatile days. We know that. But I don't really think, I don't necessarily see a long duration pain ahead of us. And I get that from the, I get that from the bond side, from our brothers over in fixed income, right? Brothers and sisters in fixed income.
There you go. Right? You got to be politically correct now.
Always. So if you're looking at treasuries, you're looking at high yield spreads in treasuries, we're at 3.17, right? Now that's up from 2.6, but 2.6 was, for all intent and purpose, that's about an all-time low, right? So for those listeners who don't know what we're talking about is a spread between treasury bonds and high yield, i.e. junk bonds, okay, of the same duration, whatever they are, and then they average them out and they measure the yield differential. If that yield is tight, if the spread between the high yield bonds and the treasury bonds is small, that's letting you know that the bond market believes the economy is strong, okay, because there's no danger of those companies that are issuing those high yield bonds repaying that debt, right? So you tend to see a lot of purchasing of those bonds, and that brings those yields down, right? And that tightens that spread. So when that's under 4, 4.5, nobody's really worried, okay? It's at 3.17. Yes, it was at 2.6. Will it go to 3.5? It could. But is there something broken in the credit markets we're seeing? Are we seeing any real stress happening on that end or not? We're not seeing parabolic moves in high yield treasury spreads. Also on the credit side, okay, we also want to measure investment grade corporates against their high yield counterparts, right? Now, you're going to get an even tighter spread there because there's obviously a differential between investment grade corporate and treasuries. Okay, so that spread's going to be even tighter and even more sensitive. Okay. Basically, from what I can gather, we had an all-time low on March 10th, okay, March 4th, of 1.38% on those spreads. We're at 1.46 today.
March 10th was an all-time low?
Correct. 1.38% spread between your investment-grade corporates and your high-yield corporates. Now we're seeing 1.46. So you're 8 basis points. Again, you know, I haven't ordered my nothing burger for lunch yet, but I think that's it. Okay. So what we're seeing is we're just not seeing this growth scare that's supposed to be taking place, that the Atlanta Fed tracker that posted a negative 1.8 seasonally annual adjusted rate for Q1 of this year for our GDP. And of course, that didn't help, right? Of course, and that's attributable to, you can ascribe that to the tariffs potentially if you wanted to, right? But we're not seeing the bond market buy this, okay? And if I'm not seeing the credit markets, I'm not seeing the treasury markets buy any of this, well then why are the equity markets buying this? You know, if you look at, you go back to December 6th, the 10-year was at 4.15. Okay, we're at 4.23 today. We started the year 4.57, okay? So last September, we were 3.62. Okay, we started October 1st right at 4. So we're still in this range. If there was a growth scare, why are we looking at a 10-year that's 4.23 and not 3.53 or 3.23? We're not seeing any of that. Okay, we're not seeing high yield jump off the page. We're not seeing small caps cave in. None of those canaries in the coal mine have decided to chirp yet.
When we've talked before about the bond market is sort of an intelligent indicator that can be used in equity outlooks because there's a lot of smart players in the fixed income game and they tend to be a little bit more rational and a little bit more deliberate in their thinking, and they have a ton of money. So they speak very loudly compared to, you know, your millennial day traders on Robinhood or wherever they're trading out these days. So when you're looking at building out your equity your outlook for the equity markets, where do you rank? Maybe that's not the fair way to ask that question, but I want to say, where do you rank what the bond market is doing in terms of other indicators that you might use in level of importance or, you know, how much significance you give to the bond market in developing your equity market outlooks?
Well, it's essential, right? I mean, if we are in a very low interest rate environment and we have good economic growth, obviously, and rates start to go up, that's due to obviously inflation. Okay. And that when you're going to start, if interest rates go up as a result of inflation, that's going to hurt, that's going to cause multiple contraction. If interest rates start to go down because of economic contraction, that can cause multiple contraction. So you tend to look at the bond markets for why are, okay, so rates are moving directionally one way or the other. Why? Okay. And that sort of creates that macro top-down thesis that we're looking for. Because when we build our portfolios, we start, okay, is the market going to expand? Is it going to contract? Okay. And of course, normally it's going to expand. Is it going to expand 2%, 3%? Okay. So earnings on the S&P, are they going to expand or contract? Okay. Based on this, okay. Now, what sectors of the economy are going to expand and which are going to contract, which are going to stay flat? Okay. So then we can kind of look to the fixed income market to verify and support what we're seeing. I mean, if we think the S&P is going to grow by 14.5-15% earnings this year, and we're going to have GDP growth of 2.5%, okay, that's great, right? But if we start to see the bond market just absolutely rally, effectively cave in, right, where people start buying treasuries, bringing those yields way, way, way down, and we start to see them sell off high-yield bonds, well, that's worth noting. That's worth looking at. That's worth understanding what's taking place. What am I not seeing? And to your point of it being sort of an intelligent indicator, the reason is no one's trying to make a lot of money really quick in the bond market, okay, especially the institutional side. They're looking for longer-term risk reduction, okay? And how can they perform to inflation or higher with the least amount of risk, okay? So they're not looking to, you know, obviously get 20% this year. They're not looking to outperform the S&P 500. They're not looking to outperform the NASDAQ. They're not looking to, you know, do anything like that. They're looking to ballast the volatility in other portfolios, right? Reduce some volatility, but also create a net return above whatever benchmark that be, whether it be inflation or whether it be the treasury markets, whatever it is. So you can kind of see if we start seeing these anomalies take place. So we have a narrative on one side that says, hey, things are great, everything's rosy, the market's going to expand, earnings are growing, look at tech, look at industrials, look at consumer discretionary, look at communication services, all is well. Okay. But you look over at treasury and we start to see the treasury market yields start to come down. We start to see high yields start to go up and up and up and up and up. Okay. Now, of course, those things don't happen independently of each other. Okay. The bond market and the equity market, they live in the same room. They're like college dorm. They're like college roommates. Okay. They're not dorm mates. They're actually roommates. They live in the same room together. And it's, you know, it's basically what Felix and Oscar. Okay. One is very, very clean and one is a hot mess who likes to party. Okay. So the bond market, that's the nerd. Everything is clean and he's, you know, he's studying, and the equity market guy's like, yo, what are you doing? I'm like, well, we're starting to see high yield sell off. Oh, okay. So we should tell people that, like, you know, things are going to go backwards, right? Yes. Oh, cool. I totally cheated off your paper. Right on. That's what happens, right? The equity markets just cheat off their nerdy bond market brothers.
That might be the best analogy in the history of the Intelligent Investment Show. I love that. So you brought up, I mean, 5-6 weeks ago, however long ago it was, you sort of I don't want to say called for a pullback. We've talked about it on the show. I'm not, you know, you weren't trying to be a naysayer, but you said you weren't really putting new money to work at that time. You've got your pullback. When I was an advisor, I always found it somewhat interesting. I want to hear you weigh in on this and tell me if I'm alone on this. If I thought the market was overpriced, I might not put money to work. I might even tell clients, I feel like the market's a little overpriced. I think we're due for a pullback. But then when the pullback happens, it still scared the crap out of me, right? Because it's like, even though I was kind of calling for this, it doesn't feel comfortable once it happens, right? It gets down to 10%, and then if it gets down 12, you start to freak out a little bit, like, did I miss something? Is there more to it than this, or is it just we're right on schedule? I know that we talked yesterday. I know you're buying very aggressively. I know you're very optimistic about the market. But is there still sort of that little, like, devil on the other shoulder that's kind of like whispering in your ear, like, Matt, you need to be afraid. Maybe there's something you've missed, or are you just like at this point so callous to that you're just like, no, buy, buy, buy. Well, shut up, devil. I'm buying.
So both can exist, right? And both do exist.
Yeah.
Right. So there, nothing is ever for sure in this world. Everything we do is conjectural. It's not fixed. It's we don't know what the outcome is going to be. We do the best work that we can. We make the best decisions that we can with the data that we have, hoping for the outcome we think is most likely. The quality of the decision that you make, okay, has no bearing on the outcome. Okay. The level of quality of that decision does not include the outcome. So if you made the best decision you could with the best data that you had, and some exogenous or endogenous event changed the mix, and obviously the outcome that you hoped was going to happen, that you prepared for was going to happen, that you allocated to happen, didn't take place, it doesn't mean it was a bad decision, right? But knowing that there's always that inherent risk that, you know, anything can take place, these markets can pull back, and they can make you a hero or a zero inside of 30 days, which they do, okay? That's where that fundamental work has to come in, you know. So if we're looking at how we construct our portfolios, and we start from our macros, and then we go into our sectors, then we go into the sectors, and we really start to dive into those, and we say, okay, well, who are the superstars? Who have the best earnings growth? Where am I getting the best discount for growth relationship? And we've gone over this several times before. Who are the superstars and why? Okay, and that's when you have to step even further back and say, what really is risk? Is risk volatility? Okay. I guess you could say risk is volatility if you believe in it, because that's what the academicians inside the universities decided on as risk, volatility, that is, right? Because they could quantitatively measure it, okay, through standard deviations and beta coefficients and what have you. And that is, as effective way as anything is there to do it. But if you look, again, if you step back and you look more of a long, you really zoom out, the companies that are in the portfolios, the fundamental core, the foundation of these portfolios, if a portfolio manager, if your advisor, or if they're using a third-party manager or whomever that is, if they did a good job, it's not real risk. It's temporary volatility risk, okay? Because am I worried about NVIDIA, Apple, Costco, Visa, Boeing, JP Morgan, Boston Scientific, the tech sector, the industrial sector, the financial sector? Am I worried about them going away and going to zero and never coming back, or losing 50 or 60% of their value and not coming back? Of course I'm not. Okay. Is it possible? Anything is possible. I get, you know, I'll be 49 here pretty soon. I guess it's possible I could have a growth spurt and grow 6 inches between now and my 50th birthday, but it's really unlikely. Okay. So those are the kinds. So I guess I'm okay to just continue to buy my size 11 shoes, because I know they're not going to grow to size 14s between now and the next time I go buy shoes, right? Those things become less and less likely the more fundamental core work that you do, right?
Sound like very sound logic. Yeah, I think I could follow that. You mentioned something yesterday I thought was really interesting, that we just had the largest outflow of, and you can explain this metric better than I can, the largest outflow from U.S. equities to the European markets ever. Can you explain that one?
Yeah. So the U.S. equity allocations dropped 40 percentage points in March. Okay. That is the biggest monthly drop on record ever. And these are global. This is a global fund manager survey. This wasn't the AAI. This wasn't the, you know, the American Association of, you know, individual investors. These aren't people with, you know, doing day trading on their Robinhood apps on their phone. Right. Okay. Right. These are,
they have money.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. Okay. Investors are now net 23% underweight in U.S. stocks against other counterparts, you know, so, and that's massive. So, you know, what we see now is December 2024, 3 months ago, okay, that was the highest overweight we ever were at plus 36%. Is the world fundamentally different than it was 3 months ago? No. Do we have fewer people in the world buying fewer things now? No. Have products stopped being built that people like? No. So, you know, we have a 60% swing in allocations from fund managers since December and a 40% swing from last month. Okay. So the bears are growling. The bears are absolutely growling right now. We're starting to see, we noticed beginning basically February 18th, February 19th, that a consumer staples sector just started to massively outperform consumer discretion. It's a comparative analysis that I do, right? I look at the equal weight consumer staple sector against the discretionary sector or vice versa, right? And I say, well, what's the market deciding? Are we having money flow into more your value stable type companies, or are we going with more discretionary type companies? And that's a pretty good indicator actually to find out kind of where risk appetite lies. And that has just, I mean, that relationship caved in starting February 19th. Well, just 2 days ago, that trend broke. Okay. So we're starting to see consumer discretionary really start to outperform. Okay. Consumer staples now. You know, we're seeing the fear greed index is at extreme fear. It's at 22. It's below 25. On March 10th, I can't go back all that far. But it was at 14. It registered a 14. That's the lowest I've ever seen it. I think it's been 8 and 9 before, but that was like the depths of COVID and things like that.
So the lower the number, the more the fear.
The more the fear, right? That's right. Extreme fear. Put that in perspective, the crash we had in August due to the Japan carry trade, it was very short-lived. It was very violent. That registered a 17. So this was actually worse than that. So we're just seeing a lot of capitulatory type readings. And if you didn't know any better, you think, gosh, is the market down 20-25%? You know, it's not. You know, and this growth scare that we're getting, and they're relating it to tariffs, and I get all that. But again, the credit markets aren't buying it. You know who else isn't buying it? Commodities. Commodities aren't buying it either. Okay. We're looking at copper today. It's basically at an all-time high. I think the all-time high ever was $5.12 a pound. I think it's 508 today. It was a 510 yesterday. Okay. These are very strong demand numbers for copper. And of course, copper is one of the essential elements of our infrastructure. We have to have it. So it's one of those, if it starts to decay, again, it starts to decay, treasury starts to rally, high yield starts to cave in. Again, things we look at, commodity traders are not all that different than fixed income traders. They're usually very erudite in their understanding of things. They trade tremendous amounts of money for larger institutions and for the benefit of others. So they tend to take a very careful approach, right? Well, Morningstar came out with an article today or yesterday, and I disagreed with it because I did the math, okay? And they said, well, the reason copper is up is very simple. It's the tariffs, because 45% of our copper is imported. So if that's tariffed, well, that's why the price is up. Okay. So I went in and said, okay, so what is the tariff on copper? Let's call it 25%. I think it's actually lower than that, but let's just say it is 25%. So you take the 45% that's imported and you back the 25% tariff out of that 45%, and you add that back into the $5.10 price, you get $4.52 a pound. Now, okay, you know, we started the year at $3.99 a pound. So it's not like, well, without tariffs, it would be $2 a pound. Without tariffs, it'd be $4.50 to $4.60 a pound, which is really close to an all-time high itself. So again, if you really look under the hood and you cut the noise out and you look to the folks that trade the big dollars, that allocate big money in commodities and fixed income, they're not buying this growth scare. They're really not. Okay. From what I can see, they're not. And I think to your point, our point a few months ago, I didn't want to put money to work at 6,100, 6,080, you know, 20,000 plus on the NASDAQ. I didn't want to, to me, that felt stretched. To me, if we look at earnings a year out and what price that we think we can get to with those earnings, that's not a good risk reward relationship. That's all. We're not timing market. It's just not a good risk reward relationship. So as the market's back here, are we buying today? Yeah, of course. I'm buying as, you know, every dollar that comes in, I am buying this dip. Will I be right? Maybe. I mean, will I be proven to be right a week from now? Maybe not. Will I be right 3 months from now? Probably. Will I be right 6 months from now? More likely. Will I be right 12 months from now? It's even more likely. And that's how you have to look at it, right? Is what's your time horizon? Our time horizon is effectively in perpetuity, right? So I have the luxury of not having to worry about, am I going to make money immediately? Okay. We know it's a good fair value purchase based on what we think the future earnings are going to be if we discount those backwards.
One of the great things that happen in sell-offs is a lot of time, I mean, this is not always true and it's not always going to be true to the same degree, but people kind of buy selectively as the market goes up nice and calm, and it's a very leisurely process, but they sell in a hurry and frantically, and it's a sell first, ask questions later kind of a mentality a lot of times. So you see correlations usually rise between sectors in down markets. So in other words, you may have in an up market, financials may be up 10%, staples may be down or up 2%, tech may be up 16%, industrials may be down 4%. There's a lot of variation between sectors in up markets. But when things start going down, they're all down, right? Typically, there's a higher degree of correlation in down markets. So that creates great buying opportunities for the things that you like, because everything's getting discounted 10%. It's not just the bad products that are getting discounted, it's the good products that are getting discounted too. So as you've been kind of working through this over the last little bit, what are your sectors that you're seeing maybe more relative value in now, maybe even than you did a few months ago before the decline?
Well, I really like industrials going forward. Okay. From a fundamental perspective, but they've pulled back pretty hard through this correction as well. I think they pulled it back about 8%. And I was looking at the earnings growth in the industrial sector, and I want to pit it against the all-time undisputed heavyweight champion of earnings growth in the S&P, which is tech, right? And 2025, 2026, and 2027 earnings growth over this 3-year period, industrials are going to increase earnings by 50% over the next 3 years. Solid. That's really solid. Put that into perspective, tech is going to increase earnings by just under 48%. Okay, so it's holding its own, and you're getting a better multiple on the industrial side. Okay, and it just so turns out that Boeing, of course, its competitors would have been in the mix too, but Boeing, which is a big part of the industrial sector, just got granted a big contract today for fighter jets. So they're doing really, really well. But you know, you're right. So there's the old saying, The market takes the elevator down and the stairs up, because the action to take, the action item when there's a problem, is very simple. Sell button, all, you know, sell and run out the door. You know, you can have toilet paper stuck to your shoe. You're running. Doesn't matter. But when it comes to buy, it's like, well, how much should I buy? Do I really feel like this is over yet? I'm not sure. And if I buy, what do I buy? And how much of that do I buy versus how much of this? So the action item is not as clear. It's not as defined, right? So that's back to, have you done your homework? What are your fundamentals look like? That's where you start. So if you know, like, being that we built these portfolios out, and we adjust them periodically here and there, we know exactly what to buy. So when it's time to pull the trigger, bam, we have that action item. So that's why your fundamentals are the core foundation of everything. And you can technical analysis, you know, I think it's effective because you get to see what the market's deciding right then and there in real time. But you have, in order for that action item to be, that action that you take has to be clean and clear and concise. Well, that's where the fundamentals come in.
Yeah. Speaking of the technicals, you talked about that inflection in, and you, the, you said around the equinoxes. So, I don't know what the exact term was there, but that's, you even mentioned it to like the stockbroker farmer's almanac. It doesn't sound like, I mean, it sounds like old wives' tales type stuff, right? It sounds like that's something that couldn't be relied upon, and you can't rely on it exclusively all the time, but there are waves and cycles and patterns. Market volume tends to go down during the summer in general, and activity and volatility in the market tends to go down over the summer months. So it might seem sort of like voodoo witchcraft type stuff to some people, but there is an element of it that's real. There's also an element of it that you can't just live and die by it. So how do you balance that? I mean, this has kind of been a whole show of me asking you questions about balancing this versus that, but you have to acknowledge these phenomena that are in the market and seasonalities of the market, so to speak, but you can't just fixate on them.
Well, exactly. You know, we kind of, for lack of a better explanation, when you get into the seasonally weak periods, your Februarys, right, into March, and then where it flex and usually gets seasonally strong into sort of late March, into April, up into the spring, up into the summer, you know it's coming. You know there's going to be, if there's going to be weakness during this period of time, it's to be expected. Doesn't mean you can't get weakness in May. Doesn't mean you can't get weakness in December. I mean, look at December of 2018, right? In fact, that's a great segue analogy into tariffs, right? We had massive tariff talks in 2018. They started in late January of 2018, and there was a 12% immediate correction. Okay, it was I think it was the fastest in history. Then the market recovered. Then the tariffs were basically implemented. There was another 9% draw, or 9 or 10% drawdown right after that. Well, over the next several 6 months, the market fully recovered and added 9% to the year. It was only on October, call it 3rd of that of 2018, where Jerome Powell came in and said, "Hey, we are far from neutral here. We need to really increase rates," because if you remember right, that's when interest rates were zero. Okay. And from there, the market lost 20%. Okay. So we actually had a negative year. We were down about 5% that year, but that was a result of a very hawkish Fed raising interest rates. And that's the famous autopilot speech. We're going to put this thing on autopilot and rates are just going to go up until this thing hits neutral. Okay. And of course the market hated that. And it sold off 20% between basically October 1st and the low was the Christmas Eve low. Okay. But 50% of market highs happen in the month of December. It's a very, very seasonally strong month. The Santa Claus rally, right? Well, in that case, we actually had a complete and utter capitulation. We had a crash in December. And frankly, this December we had in 2024 was negative. Okay. And that was, you know, due in large part to it might have gotten overextended. Tariff talks were starting to come in, those kinds of things. So there is no one set hard fast rule for, oh, it's February, it's time to sell. Okay, it's March 14th, it's time to buy. Okay, it's April 10th, or it's August 10th, it's time to sell. Okay, it's October 10th, it's time to buy. You know, you just kind of see these ebbs and flows with markets that tend to happen for a variety of reasons, right? But they do happen, and you have to. It's easy to discount and say that's meaningless, and to some extent it is, but it's also true. And if you dismiss these things, you know, then you're kind of not prepared for it. So you know, we were sitting at 22.6 times earnings here just a short time ago. Now we're at 20.6, okay? Going into a seasonally weak period, going into some high uncertainty. In fact, Chair Powell said on Wednesday, he hearkened back to this multiple times during his speech that just uncertainty is extraordinarily high. Okay. And that is why the market is being so ornery right now. Is there a growth scare? No, not really. Do we know what tariffs are going to do? Yeah. Is it really going to hurt all that much? Not really. We just don't know. And that's what's causing this bathtub of sloshing around, right?
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Well, what you got planned for the weekend? You're going to get to be outside a little bit now that we're springtime, or is it not spring in Vegas yet?
It is beautiful here. I think it's supposed to be 72 degrees today. It is a Chamber of Commerce day here in Las Vegas. I can't wait to go out. This weekend, we're going to enjoy a nice dinner with some friends. I think we have some baseball going on Sunday. So it's going to be a good weekend. What about you? Man.
Well, I'm about 2 hours away from tip off in to watch my Heels play Ole Miss. So hopefully we can keep the momentum up from Tuesday night when we completely destroyed San Diego State. Hopefully we can keep that going. And if we can do that, it'll be a good day.
So it will be. I will be watching actually this afternoon, probably with my brother, and we'll definitely be pulling for you guys because you know UNLV can't seem to make it to the tournament anymore.
Yeah, that's how I am at football. We don't have a good football team around here. So in football, I'm just kind of like follow the bandwagons around a little bit. But anyway, if you are listening to the show, I always like to remind everyone that the Intelligent Investment Show is for educational, informational use only. We are not here to tell you what to do with your money because we don't know you. So we don't know anything about your circumstances or what you should do with your money. But you can give Matt a call and chat with his team at 702-655-8300. He has a very polite, well-mannered professional staff there that will be happy to help you in answering any of your questions that you may have. Matt, enjoyed it as always. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Remember, if you're listening, if you're one of our regular listeners, check us out live in a couple of weeks at 1 o'clock and 1 o'clock Eastern time. We will see you then. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, dude.
Have a great weekend.
As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com.
We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Discussions in the Intelligent Investment Show are for educational purposes only. The information presented should not be considered specific investment advice or a recommendation to take any particular course of action. Always consult with a financial professional regarding your personal situation before making investment or financial decisions. The views and opinions expressed are based on current economic and market conditions and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any statements of future expectations will come to fruition. All investing involves risk, including the potential for loss of principal. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through American Retirement Planning Group, ARPG, and United Planners are independent companies. Garrett Lill and Wealth Partners are not affiliated with ARPG or United Planners. Any endorsement that I may have given during this recording, it is important to note that I am not a client of ARPG. The views expressed should not be considered representative in any way of my past, present, or future experience with Matt or ARPG. No incentives have been provided to me in connection with any endorsements I may have given on the Intelligent Investment Show. Investing involves risk, and there is no guarantee of any future results, performance, or success.